All right. I'd like to welcome everyone to the September 19th, 2020 Finance Administration Committee meeting. I have some announcements on tonight's meeting. This meeting is being conducted at the Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant Boardroom as a convenience to the public. The public may also participate via call-in number or Zoom webinar link. In the event of disruption to service, which prevents the agency from broadcasting, the meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled. Remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend in person. Public comment during item two will be taken for items that are not on tonight's agenda, but are within the subject matter of the agency. For items covered in this agenda, we will take public comment at the time each item is considered. For members of the public who are present and would like to comment, please complete and submit a public comment card to the administrator to help expedite this process. To participate in public comment from a computer, tablet, or smartphone, please click the raise hand feature in Zoom when I announce the agenda item on which you wish to speak. You will be notified when it is your turn to speak, at which time you may unmute your device. To participate in public comment via phone, please dial *9 when I announce the agenda item on which you wish to speak. Phone participants will be called on by the last two digits of their phone number or by name. When it is your turn to speak, please dial *6 to unmute. As a reminder to staff who are presenting online, please mute all of your devices until you are ready to speak. When speaking, please turn on your camera and unmute your microphone. When you are finished presenting, please remute and turn off your camera. The procedure for tonight's meeting is as follows. We will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. We will ask for public comment from members attending in person, and then those attending remotely. We will then ask for discussion and questions from committee members. These will be taken in the order that hands are raised. The committee will then come to a consensus to move the item to the board for consideration. Any PowerPoint presentations shown at tonight's meeting will be posted on the SCV Water website. At this time, all committee members are present. And we can start with the Pledge of Allegiance. Director Colley, would you like to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Lately, I'm used to this being 8:30 at night. So thank you for having me back and looking forward to all the punishment for the next few months. So do we have any public comment?
Yes, we do. In person tonight, we have Cam Noltemeyer.
Cam Noltemeyer, as you know, one of your members is deceased, but he also did something very big for the ratepayers of this community, and he set up a administrative meeting for the right to vote. And that is what I'm here to say, that that will be going forward. And this is a public record, a public election for water board members in November. This is just a reminder that will be going forward despite him being deceased. I pointed you to the documentation for that at the last meeting. I hope you were able to come up with it, because it was done through LAFCO. It was not how you usually do your things. If you have it located, let me know, because I know somewhere in my vast records I have it. And it will be going forward. And for once, we will have an elected board. And that will be very good for the ratepayers. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Stonemeyer.
I'd like to just make a real quick clarification. The right to vote, I think, was established in the Constitution. There have been a couple of amendments, women's suffrage and the like. Jerry Gladbach has done a great deal of really great things, but suffrage is not one of them that I think he can be credited with.
We have any other comments from the board? Chair
Kelly, we do not have any other in-person public comments, but there is public comment that is printed in the packet. That's up to your discretion if you'd like to read aloud.
It applies to a meeting next month.
Yeah, you're referring to the letter from past employee Brian Folsom.
Yes, item two.
It's not a subject matter for a future time period, so I will pass on that.
Thank you.
So moving on to item three, recommendation to approve a resolution adopting a revised investment policy. We have with us Rochelle.
Thank you. So since the last policy revision for the investment policy that was adopted in February of this year, staff has engaged services from the firm Chandler Asset Management, who recommends some modifications in a few sections to represent best practices. So at this time, I would like to introduce from Chandler Asset Management remotely, Mia Correll-Brown. She's the Senior Relationship Manager, and Elena Sampson, the Senior Portfolio Strategist, to summarize some of the changes in the policy.
Good evening, honorary directors and staff at Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency. I'm Mia Correll-Brown, Senior Relationship Manager at Chandler. I have with me Elena Sampson. Elena is a Senior Portfolio Strategist, and she will go ahead and briefly summarize the proposed changes to the agency's investment policy.
Thank you, Mia, and thank you to the board for having us. I want to move us to slide or page number 9 in the packet, and I'm going to summarize this in a couple of sections in terms of what we're recommending. First of all, I want to acknowledge that the board already had a current policy that was quite extensive and incorporated most of the best practices from CDIAC, CMTA, as well as GFOA. The categories of recommendation are fivefold. The first, in the sections 5 and 7, these really grant discretionary authority to the investment advisor and ensure that we are getting best execution on your behalf through a competitive broker selection. That's section 5.0 and sections 7.0 recommendations. The next section that we've made recommendations is section 8. And this is to open the door to expanding investments beyond the 5-year maturity. This is allowable under California code and is advisable to have language, particularly when there are long-term liabilities or projects, to ensure that investments are matching that has that asset liability match. Similarly, because there are different needs in your investment portfolio, liquidity, short-term and long-term projects, we also advise that you have duration targets that match those investment requirements. These duration targets take into account many of the different kinds of asset classes that may be called upon or redeemed early beyond puts. This is a bit more holistic than a weighted average maturity. The third recommendation are a few updates to your suitable investments. Overall, this is just helping to align further to the authorized investments according to California code. The first is clarifying the credit ratings in accordance with best practices. This will ensure that we are focused, as your co-fiduciary, on only the highest quality names in alignment with your safety objective. Second, we want to state that although the policy already had a 5% limit stated in Section 14.4, we sought to align this best practice explicitly with some of your suitable investments, and that's what you see changed there on the page. Also, the policy had additional limits in regards to the callable agencies, and we're suggesting that this is limited to 20%, again, to ensure that we are limiting risk in your portfolio. And finally, the last two recommendations, the first is in Section 12. This clarifies the safekeeping requirements for your custodian with regards to any investment transactions and really sets clear expectations for the custodial reports. And Section 15, the policy is already very strong by having detailed monthly reports in your statements. This just clarifies the timing with regards to reporting. Those are the five recommendations that we are making in terms of a summary, and want to turn it back over to Mia.
Thank you. We want to go ahead and open it up to any questions if there are any.
We have a public comment on this item.
Yes, we do. Cam Noltemeyer would like to speak.
Yes, I did some time looking at this and reviewing it, and I found it very interesting with this agency. In one place, you comment on how much money you have, and that's on page 109, $268 million plus. And then you go in a little bit farther and you find the debt service. Interesting enough, it's very close to the same amount. So I don't know where you come from, but when you have so much money and you have so much debt, you really don't have much money if that debt is called. And that's the game you're playing. This is debt service, outstanding principal. It's all in your package. So I'm sure you should have noticed it. And I would think anybody making these recommendations should have noticed it also. But it's really just a game you're playing. You're saying, gee, we have this amount of money. Of course, we do have to give about $9,000 back to some developers. I can't see where you're gaining anything with what you're doing, and you will continue to lose money for the people that apparently you're representing, but you're certainly not representing me. Thank you.
Hey, any additional comments from online public?
No additional public comment at this time.
Okay. Then there's no more in-house.
Correct.
Okay. Director comments, Director Colley.
Just have a couple here. On page 9, 5.0, external investment advisors may be granted discretionary authority. Who grants that discretionary authority?
I can go ahead and address that question. The finance director slash treasurer typically designates or grants that authority to the external investment advisor. If you'd like me to comment further, although this is a discretionary relationship, I do want to reiterate that the director of finance and treasurer will receive duplicate confirmations of each and every trade and transaction that occurs. And all of those trade tickets as well as monthly statements, will be available on our Chandler Online Secure Portal. Our director, the designated director of finance, treasurer, and her staff have access to all of that information. We also plan ahead to have bi-weekly and monthly calls with staff to keep them apprised of investments as we go through the initial phase of the investments. And then we typically tend to meet with our clients on a monthly and or quarterly basis to keep them informed.
So my preference, I think, would be to have the policy say specifically who's providing this, who's giving over the authority, not just that the somehow the policy is or some vague. So could we add some verbiage perhaps that would say the general manager or his designee, his or her designee?
Yes, we can definitely incorporate that language.
Yeah, that I think that would be preferable rather than having it this vague.
Excuse me one second, Director Colleen. Are you referring to having the general manager take control of this versus the finance department take control of this?
No, I want the general manager to control the agency, and the general manager can designate whoever he thinks is appropriate to designate it to, and then that person would be able to grant the discretion.
Okay. Fair enough. Thank you for the clarification.
So, yeah, I always think that the general manager, any authority this board gives should go, in my view, to the general manager first, and then he would then designate it on further.
Okay, and the person that's designated would be the person that continues to make the decisions until the general manager makes changes.
Yeah, I would think that's true.
All right. So thank you very much.
That's in Section 5, and we can just add that. Right now it says the investment program is hereby delegated to the treasurer, but we can change that to the general manager. And then the other language of delegating it to the treasurer.
Mr. GM, we put another thing on your shoulders. Do you have any comments about that? That's all right. We'll come up with two or three other ones later then. No comment. All right. Any other comments on Director Colley's number 5? No. Okay. Proceed, please.
So then the next page, page 11, I guess it's two pages on, page 11, 9.6. I'm wondering if somebody could maybe massage the language here a little bit. I think what I understand is an agency with a capital A means us. An agency with a little a means somebody else. Because otherwise it wouldn't make the maximum percent of agency callable securities. So normally if we have when I read that the first time, I was thinking, well, what is that? Well, how do we have in our investment portfolio something that we can call? That didn't make any sense to me at all. So apparently it's intended to be the folks that we have given money to can call the investment. I think that's the intent of the language there. And maybe we could massage that language a little bit to make it so that somebody like me doesn't stumble over it and have to riddle through it.
Absolutely, we can do that. You are correct. Agency with a little a was referring to federal agencies such as Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Okay. So, yeah, I would want to make sure that that's clear. So, thank you.
Would you prefer to just change it from agency to the initials for Santa Cruz? Because that's essentially who it is.
No, the agency with little a, there is anybody but us. So it's not Santa Clarita Valley. It's some outside agency or the.
Okay.
Can we just say the maximum percentage of federal agency callable securities?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So we just add federal before agency.
Okay, that'll work.
All right, good.
And then is the, where it says in any single agency / GSE issuer, is that agency supposed to be big A or little a?
That should be small a in that case, and we can clarify and say federal agency.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Which number is that in?
In the red markup for 9.6, right before.
Oh, okay.
So we got a little A or federal agency, and then federal agency on the next one.
Right. Okay. Thanks.
Anything else, Dr.
I'm Collins? Done. Thanks.
Any other comments with regards to this, Dr. Goodside?
Just quickly, the statement was made at the beginning and, you know, is in our report that it's best practice. And I know, you know, various things were quoted in that, but was this peer reviewed or did the staff compare this to other agencies? Was there any other double check on this?
Some of these recommendations came out of CMTA, which we are a member of, and then also GFOA. So we didn't compare them to any other agencies other than any other associations that kind of govern the investment policies.
Okay, I think that's sufficient as long as there was another look other than the investment firm at this. So it's coming from organizations as well. Yes. Okay, thank you.
Any additional comments? That's why I asked.
Thank you. And I'm not sure if my question is the same as Director Gutzeit's or not, just in terms of the general concept of taking our investment policy a step further and delegating authority to another outside agency or group to help make investment decisions for us. Is this, are other water agencies or other utilities also doing this?
Yes, I would say majority, especially of the larger utilities. Okay. Now, we had two outside actually brokers working for us before. So somebody else was still making those trades with the same thing, confirmation. With the agency. So we have actually somebody working for us looking at more trades instead of us saying, okay, we have money to invest. Where can we invest it? We have somebody actually working for us looking for those investments.
Okay, thank you. And I was going to also ask if we feel that perhaps after we do this for a while that this isn't serving us well, we could always change the policy, right?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
Any additional comments? I know that Ms. Patterson and I sat down and went over the complete event for tonight, and we went through this policy. She had a lot of knowledge as to the changes and a lot of recommendations into the changes, so I appreciate that. I will say, looking at this, that's the most red ink I've seen since I think I was in high school and my teacher graded my homework. So, but as long as it works, that's fine. Any additional layouts? Mr. Peterson, you're still getting acclimated to the situation.
Thank you, Director Kelly. I am. But this policy is probably the most wordy one I ever read before.
Yeah, all right. Well, being retired 7 times, you know, that could take away from it a little bit. So,
if I may put you all at ease, this is Mia Correll again. Our co-chief investment officer, Jason Schmidt, actually serves as a grader, if you will, for the California Municipal Treasurers Association. So this policy will be bringing you in line with all of those best practices set forth by the State Treasurer's Office, as well as the California Debt and Investment Advisory Commission. And I also want to reiterate that we manage $21 billion in our home state of California alone and serve many of your neighboring water agencies as well. And I certainly look forward to seeing many of you at the upcoming Aqua Conference in La Quinta. So thank you for your consideration.
That was probably your first mistake, but... All right, if there's nothing else, Mr. Stone.
Yeah, I thought of a question, just got curious about it. This is really for Chandler, and I'm not sure if it's actually in your scope, so it may not be in your scope for your services to us, but I was reading the section about, you know, noting other investment pools that we might invest in, and thinking back to my experience in Orange County, mm-hmm. in 1994. Do you ever do a service to evaluate the other pools that a client is invested in to determine whether there might be concerns?
Yes, absolutely. We take a look at all of the underlying securities and investments. I can tell you that we are very much in touch with the investment staff for the local agency investment fund. And I would say that typically that's LAIF and it's run by the state treasurer's office. That is typically the primary investment pool that we recommend. It's very safe, very transparent, dollar in, dollar out. If the if the agency staff were to express interest in investing in another pool, we would absolutely evaluate that pool for on your behalf for safety, liquidity, and certainly reasonableness and return.
Okay, great. That's great to know as a potential need in the future. Thanks.
Absolutely, it's our pleasure.
Thank you very much for joining us. And looks like we'll move on to item four.
Is this a consent or discussion item for the board?
I made an assumption it was consent. But I okay. didn't.
Thank you.
I shouldn't have spoken for everybody, so everybody's fine with this being consent. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, so moving on to item four. Once again, presented to us by Rochelle Patterson, recommend approval of revised classification plan, position control, and job descriptions.
Yes. So, this kind of couple things have triggered this item to revise the agency's classification plan and position control. So after the implementation of the Oracle ERP or accounting system in July of 2021, it was necessary for us to ensure that the employees doing those tasks, whether they're specialized or changed in their duties, aligned with the job description. So we wanted to ensure that what we're asking employees to do was in the job description. So we had a consultant conduct a study of those classifications of the organization and look at our staffing positions and how they align in the finance department, and the finance department being administration, purchasing, contracts, finance, procurement, risk management. So it doesn't include all the finance functions, but those specific functions. There was also a couple retirements in two departments, which triggered some additional operational changes, one in the operations department for treatment and maintenance, and also one in the finance department. So some of the changes that came out of the report from the consultant were a few classification changes, some title changes. I also have on page 44 what the financial impact would be, and that's the financial impact from October to the end of the fiscal year. And then we had two accountant positions that will be reclassified as accountant one, and an accountant position that will be reclassified as accountant two. So this series of accountant is consistent with their job family of our other career ladders. So say like a utility worker one, a utility worker two, and a senior. This will align with the rest of the job and the career ladders in the agency. There's one senior accountant position though, to be reclassified as an accountant two. And a management analyst that would be reclassified to a buyer. This incumbent in the management analyst class is recommended to be reclassed as a buyer to be consistent with the body of work performed and aligned within the market. Also, a change to the accounting manager is just a name change only to accounting supervisor. And then the senior management analyst change to administrative services manager, which will include a responsibility for the coordination of several functions, including purchasing and procurement, contracts, management, risk management, as well as the fleet and warehousing inventory functions of the agency, and has recommended that we create a new classification for this position. We've also recommended a finance manager, which is a new classification. And that is triggered by the retirement of the Chief Financial Administrative Officer, which leaves a vacancy as the Director of Finance and Administration. And we feel that it is recommended right now to fill that vacancy with a finance manager. It will give us balance on the finance side and with administrative services manager. And we have the controller that will give us balance across the department. And those duties would include financial planning for budgeting, rate setting, investment debt management, capital project analysis, forecasting, and other related duties. That position would actually go from a range 46 to a range 40, which would have a financial impact of a savings of $53,000 for the 8 months remaining in this fiscal year. And then it would be more for the 12-month period for next fiscal year. Also in the operations department and for the electrical instrumentation technician, there was a senior instrumentation technician who retired. And there is an incumbent right now as an electrical instrumentation technician that is would be reclassified as that senior instrumentation technician due to that retirement. So that is noted in the position control, and it has an impact of $2,800 and $2,814. So the total financial considerations for the 8 months remaining the year would be a savings to the agency of $46,396. And if we annualize it, it's about a $70,000 annual savings by making these changes. And the recommendation is that the Finance Administration Committee recommend that the Board of Directors approve the changes to the agency's classification plan as presented, the position control, and the job descriptions as noted in the attachments 3 through 6. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Thank you very much. Do we have any public comment?
No public comment at this time.
All right. Comments from directors, committee members, Director Goodside?
I'll just say real quick, I had a couple questions from Ms. Patterson this morning, and she answered them in great detail. And so I'm good with this policy.
So that'll teach you to ask questions in the future?
No, it was all good. Okay. And jumping a bit ahead, I'm okay with this going on consent because I think it's very thorough, if everybody else is okay with that.
Okay. Director, you have a question?
I don't have a question, just a comment. I just wanted to say I appreciate the creating kind of that clear path for advancement, creating a 1, a 2, and a 3 in the supervisory position. So I think that's nice for staff to work towards building up as they go through and are here longer and longer with the agency. So I think that's nice. Thank you.
Any additional questions? Yes.
Just minor.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, so there's no one already internally that we can promote from within for the finance manager? We're just not built for that yet?
It's possibly. Okay. It'll be an open recruitment. Okay. So internal candidates could definitely apply.
Okay. And then I wasn't sure which category this would exactly fall under, but I know that we've been applying for a lot more grants recently. And so I was hoping that that's also taken under consideration. It sounds like almost a full-time job at this point. So would that fall under somebody's...
That position is under Water Resources as a management analyst too. And that position handles all the grants.
Okay.
At this point.
Thank you.
Great. And I don't believe, I know that when you and I talked, we talked months, and I may have not heard you say it, but you referenced 8 months. And that's because we're looking at this possibly taking effect as of around November 1st. So it would be 8 months from November to the end of the year.
Yes.
Okay. Just wanted to re-clarify that in my brain. So if there's no additional comments, then... All right, so look at moving this to consent, general consensus. All right, great. Moving on to item 5. You want to just pull the meetings and you can just call these? No. All right, item 5, presented again by Rochelle Patterson, recommend approval of a revised employee manual policy number 13, referencing policy number 13, holidays.
So at the request of the board of directors or committee, so this report presents the agency's current holiday schedule, as well as a survey of information on holidays offered by SCV Water's benchmark comparison agencies. So the survey includes information as of July of 2022 about which agencies have added the most recent federal holiday, Juneteenth, to their holiday schedule. So after reviewing the holiday schedule, it was determined that in looking at the holiday schedules that SCV Water was falling slight behind based on the survey, and that by adding one additional holiday to its policy but not designating a specific observance date, since there are several to choose from, it would be the recommendation of staff. But we did perform quite a bit of analysis with the salary, with the survey. So not only the 10 benchmark agencies we used, there are also 46 other agencies that were surveyed as well that answered our survey question. Some of those were cities, some of them were rural areas, some of them in larger cities, smaller cities, but it was just a combination in California of who responded to our survey. So there were 46 total agencies who responded to the survey. And of those 46, 10 were observing Juneteenth, and 2 were moving towards passing its observance. On average, a majority of those agencies had an average of 12 holidays, where there was a combination of holidays and floating holidays. There were some agencies that offered up to 13 holidays and then up to 15 when floating holidays were included. But we used our analysis based on our benchmark agencies because those are closer to our size and location. So the survey indicated that SCV Water's policy on holidays is slightly below the market median of our salary and benefit survey group. And the management recommends adding one additional holiday, but not designating the specific date. So just adding as a floating holiday. The financial impacts of adding a floating holiday is no budgetary impact, since that's taken just like a vacation day. We were to add a holiday, it's estimated that it would be approximately about $3,000 per day if the agency were to close. That's to pay for on-call staff and overtime of operators or anybody that's required to be here. And then it was recommended or asked about at the agenda planning of just about how much it costs the agency to run per day. And when we include the fully burdened rate divided by 260 days, it's $113,000. So that's included in your financial considerations. The Finance Administration Committee, we're recommending that they recommend to the Board of Directors to approve the addition of one floating holiday to the agency's holiday schedule and amending Employee Manual Policy Number 13. That concludes my report.
All right, great. Public comment online or in presence?
No public comments at this time, either way.
So comments from the committee? Director Crowley?
First, just a couple of maybe clarifications in the policy as you proposed it. On the bottom of board packet, page 85, it says the employee will be paid out the remaining unused floating holidays at the employee's regular hourly rate. Can we include maybe 8 hours, since depending on when they might have taken it, either would have been 8 or 9 hours. And so if they didn't take it, can we let them know that it'll be paid out at 8 instead of 9, or instead of having an argument because it's not in the policy at all?
I think so. I'm asking Amy, since she's in charge of payroll, if that's something that is doable. The only thing is that an employee, we are allowing them to at least take it in half day increments. So it's possible that they could have a day and a half. So is that?
That'd be 4 hours.
That's 4 hours plus eight. So if there's any remaining hours, it would be 1 day would be 8 hours. Is that correct? If there's any remaining days, it would be considered like
a day would be day. Eight. Correct. That would be my, I mean, it doesn't say in here whether it's 8 or 9. And
it
since
it says if it's a Friday, it's 8 hours.
And right. Right. But if they didn't take it, what day did they not take is the question then.
Well, and the difference is we also have staff on different schedules. We have some staff on 980 and we have some staff on 8 days. So
under this policy as it's written,
everybody's given the same number of hours, and then how they use those hours is spread across when they use them.
So everybody's given 8 hours or 9 hours. And if under this policy, everybody's given how many hours for this extra holiday?
To be fair to, go ahead, Richard.
I was going to say they're given 3 days. So there's differences for, like Amy was saying, for the 980s, would be mostly 9 hours. For the lab employees, they work an 8 hour shift, 8:40s. The treatment operators work 12 hour days. So it would be the equivalent days to whichever shift that they work.
So the operators are given in floating holidays, if we have passed this policy, they're given 36 hours of floating holidays.
So right now everyone's given 18 hours at the beginning of the year. So 2 floating holidays equivalent to 18 hours.
Okay. All right. So 9 hours per assumed day of holiday. All right.
Well, and they can take it in half day increments. So to be fair to all the employees, it was set at a specific number of hours. So it wasn't favoring or placing other employees at a disadvantage.
Okay. So can you?
Just the majority of the staff are 980. So they, it's 8 days at 9 hours, and the last day is at 8 hours.
Okay. So, this policy.
Well, because we have to look at the payroll system. So you don't pay per day, you pay per hour. So we have to put something in the accrual bank of hours. So if we go from 27 up to 36 or 3 days, it would be 36 hours. And whatever is remaining, that's what they would get paid out at the end of the year if they don't use it.
Okay, so it'd be 18 plus 9 under the new policy. It'd be 27 hours.
Oh,
right?
27. Sorry.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah. No problem. I mean,
I'm adding an extra day.
I have a master's degree in electrical engineering, and I can screw up basic math all the time, is with the best of them. All right. So it's okay. So unfortunately, this policy doesn't provide me any of that information. So I'm not sure exactly how to,
It could be clarified to just state, it seems like our practice is a little bit different than even the unmodified language.
That's here. What it sounds like, yeah.
And we could certainly describe what we're doing and then change that, if the committee approves, change that to 27 hours instead of 18. I will say for most employees, from a practical standpoint, if you get 18 hours of floating holiday, you pick a 9 hour day to use it on your time card. You don't pick an 8 hour day and have a stray 1 hour floating around that you need to use and remember to use by the end of the year. But
well, you're going to get paid for it.
If you did, you would get paid for it. But most
you know, the policy also states that it's encouraged to take these first before vacation. So further up in that paragraph.
Okay. So really right now under the current policy, the employees are given 2 1/2 days of floating holiday, right? Not 2, but it's 2 1/2.
Well, it's 18
hours. 18 hours would a regular. So if they're working 80 hours in 2 weeks, that's an average of 8 hours per day.
Yeah.
Okay. So an average day, they would.
Yeah. This is kind of like the oven and refrigerator joke, though. On average, I'm fine, but my feet are freezing and my head is awfully warm. If you never heard that joke, it's a good joke. But if you think of it another way, okay. The median day is 9 hours because 8 out of 9 work days is a 9 hour day. There's 1 8-hour day every 2 weeks, which is the working Friday.
And then there's a 0 hour day.
Yeah. So, you know,
I don't know that the median helps me a whole lot when I've got
but
the 0, 8, and 9 to deal with. So I would suggest that this, that our current practice provides the employees 2 1/2 days. That, you know, if we go back tomorrow and stop doing this 280 schedule, then they will, you know, and the policy doesn't change, then they're going to get an extra 2 hours off under this policy. Anyway, so that's my first concern. And then on the next page there, page 86 in our board package, it says employees who do not use their full 2 floating holidays by the end of the calendar year may be subject to discipline. So, I mean, that seems like, you know, if you don't use it, you get paid out and what, a beating? Okay.
This is where that delegation of authority comes in handy. But if they know their math, they'll be okay. Yeah, I think this is a
legal.
There's kind of a problem with, again, if an employee is not taking any vacation and is not taking any leave, you know, the threat of discipline is the absolute last threat or last lever to pull to try to get an employee to schedule vacation or time off. And I think you find something mirroring that in the vacation policy as well. That it is there for a reason. It's there to give employees that time to recharge, to hopefully improve their physical and mental well-being, to be good, productive, attentive employees when they are here. So I can't answer the detailed legal question of why we have to have that. But I think if we don't have something in there, then we have no recourse if an employee never takes vacation.
Well, how about if we just tell them they're not going to get paid for it? That'd be a recourse.
We could say administrative discipline just to make clear that it's not physical discipline.
Okay, yeah.
Water balloons, you know.
Yes, I didn't really think we beat very many employees. So. I'd be a little more comfortable with something like that. It's just the contrast between, you know, hey, if you don't use it, you're going to get paid for it. You know, and I get a little extra money. That's cool. And then a beating will follow. It just really was. Yeah. I would hope we have it for that at least. All right. Okay. So my final comment is that, oh, no. The problem with the survey that we did in my mind is that a floating holiday has the look, taste, and feel of leave. And so unless we compare the two together, this provides little information. So, you know, it would serve our employees, since it's a floating holiday, okay? It is, I don't know how you would distinguish it from an additional day, of leave, at least in the employee's mind. And so unless we have information on what these other agencies are doing with leave as well, and really, if you're going to compare them, we ought to sum up the leave and the floating holiday, or ought to sum up the leave and all of the holidays, and then see how we compare if we're going to make that comparison. So my preference would be to send this back for some more information, because I don't see how we can realistically make the comparison that's being made in a way that, when we discussed pay and other things in the past, I've always suggested that, well, we always look at each individual one of these things. Okay, what is the what is the pay? What is the leave policy? What is the policy for medical insurance? What is the policy? You know, and if you look at each one of these individually, it kind of, that's not how an employee decides where they're going to work. An employee decides, he looks at the package. And so when we're brought these individual pieces, it's harder for us to evaluate. So as a minimum, I think this needs to go back and have it combined with a leave policy before we are asked to make a decision.
Right. We did do a benefits package comparison when we did the class and comp study. I don't believe they looked at just holidays, but benefits, and that we were in line with the market at that time. But I don't think it had specific leave.
Well, I remember reading and getting sort of a hand waving. It didn't, what I recall reading, and if you'll send it to me, I'll reread it. But what I recall reading was something that was pretty difficult to attach any quantitative analysis to. It seemed like it was more of a hand waving argument, and I understand it's difficult to do the analysis with enough rigor, but in this particular case, I don't see, since leave and a floating holiday look, feel, and smell the same, I think that we ought to be looking at them together at least that much.
Yeah, I think it,
my thought.
It does get complicated because some entities also use a combined sick leave and vacation policy and personal leave. So there is a difficulty. I do think our approach here was to try to understand. We didn't include leave that was in any kind of combined leave environment like that. We also reviewed for some of the agencies that actually have labor agreements. It's spelled out under holidays that they distinguish both fixed and floating holidays. So we were able to identify those. And really what led us to that was, would the addition of a number of additional holidays by either the federal or state government, it creates an issue of, do you cut, you start having to pick and choose which holidays have priority to maintain a certain number. And then you're choosing who gets to observe what holiday on what day. So we felt that looking at the combined total and then adjusting our floating holidays would bring us into alignment and allow employees to choose if they wish to take Juneteenth or Cesar Chavez or perhaps one of their own religious holidays off, they have more flexibility to do that. Or frankly, if they want to attend a family reunion in Pennsylvania, you know, they have more flexibility to do that. So that was the thinking. And I realize it's not, you know, it's not quite comprehensive across all benefits, but I think we did our best to try to look at each of those 10 agencies and keep it as apples to apples as we could within that comparative.
I'll make sure that you're understanding my point.
Okay.
The point being that earned leave and floating holidays are to the individual employee equally useful for all of those things you just mentioned.
Right.
Right. So if every one of these other agencies provided one more day of leave than we did, or if we provided one more day of leave than they do already, just, and I don't know, I don't say that's true. I just say, I don't know, then we wouldn't be behind. And so I don't see how I don't see how this committee can make a good decision based on the data we've been given without examining the number of holidays, or I mean, the number of leave days that employees get on the comparable agencies.
So earned leave also typically has a vesting schedule to it, which is another factor, and sometimes has a work group or class schedule to it, particularly in agencies that have bargaining units, but not exclusively. So there might be executive leave or administrative leave for certain employee groups. There may be a vesting schedule, usually starting at a lower level of earned leave when you first start with an agency, and then over time you vest with your longevity with the agency to a longer period of vacation availability. So these are, in this case, the numbers we're providing are clearly aside from those. I guess the question would be, if we want to commission a review of our overall vacation and stack it up against the 10 survey agencies, we could also look at that and see how that looks. I just note that in the case of some of the agencies, we may need to pull out sick leave or somehow account for the fact that some agencies have moved to a combined, you know, PTO kind of an environment that includes both sick and vacation time without any distinction. So it is a more complicated world.
I think this originally came as a comment or a choice with regarding Juneteenth as to whether it should be brought to the agency as a permanent holiday. And then staff went a little bit step beyond and came up with a comparison of numbers of vacation days for other, numbers of holidays for other organizations. So in trying to bring our employees up to the standard of what the industry is, we're now having a choice of coming up with a name. And I do understand Director Scali's comments with regards to the potential confusion. And if we're basically going to agree with adding another employee day, then it seems to me that the only thing we need to agree on tonight is what the name of that employee day is going to be, because that seems to be what the contention is. And it is to a degree. I mean, if it was called Flexible Holiday Choice Day, you know, I mean, in general, it covers the fact that they've got a choice of taking it for whatever, you know, religious organization they belong to or whatever the case may be. So you're trying to give them an additional day, and you're trying to determine what it would be called without confusing it with, you know, the normal.
No, maybe I'll make another stab at trying to make myself understood. My difficulty is that the data we've been provided suggests that others are providing more paid holidays than we are.
And that's true.
And that's the data we've been provided suggests that they are okay. So there's two issues with that. One is that we're not providing two, we're providing two and a fraction of floating holidays. And you know, it just occurs to me, it is something else that when, so we provide, it'd be interesting to look and see how many of these fall on a Friday and how many fall on a Monday, because there's, if they fall on a Monday, if employees are given a Monday off for the holiday, then that again is more than 8 hours they've been given off. And so I'm wondering if the net effect of all of these holidays is actually more than 10 times 8, which would be 80 hours in a typical year. It'd be interesting to see if it's really more than 80 already. But at any rate, so it's 80 plus the 18 right now. Okay, so at least 80, I would say. Well, it has to be more than 80 already. So we're already providing, I don't know that the data we've been given is accurate. And I'm concerned that we're, this day, this extra day, it doesn't matter what we call it. It looks and feels like a day off, which is a leave or a holiday or something. It doesn't matter what we call it. I'm not trying to mince, I'm not trying to label it. That's not my concern. I'm just concerned that other agencies may provide more or less time off for their employees, and that we may be getting ahead of them more than we intend if we do this. So I would really like to see this. I would like to see it address those questions.
Sure. Well, first, the survey of agencies also did not tabulate whether they're 9-hour days or 8-hour days. So by taking just our comparative and raising doubts about how those hours are calculated without doing the same for the comparison group, I don't know that that's a fair comparison. As for the accuracy of the data, I think we've done our best to try to vet it. I know Rochelle and I did some independent website looking to audit what our HR staff had done for the comparison agencies. And we read through some labor agreements to try to make sure we understood what they said in a couple of cases. So I think we've done our best to bring something forward here. I don't know where to go with the aspect about whether it should be hours or days, but I'm certainly open to input from the committee and the board on that. I mean, the basic proposal is, I think we've substantiated that we're about one day, whether it's 8 or 9 hours, shy of our desired mid-market position in our survey group. And the practical proposal was to do it as a floating holiday, just so that we don't have to pick or choose between one winner or loser in a holiday designation, and felt that that might also give staff a little more flexibility. So that might be viewed as a positive. Whether we keep two of them as 9-hour days and we add a third day, we could call it a collie day instead of a holiday at 8 hours. Maybe that would be a compromise.
Director Goodside, yes.
But yeah, I just want to assure you, I mean, we come here with good intention, and not to try to subterfuge or do any kind of sleight of hand. It's just simply, and frankly, I was surprised. I thought when we would do the survey, we would probably be right on the money in terms of the number of days off that are non-vacation, non-sick leave. So it came as a bit of a surprise to me. And The other thing was that clearly the trend is not yet there on wide implementation of Juneteenth or even Cesar Chavez. It varies quite a bit. And when you read the narrative, you can see how much it varies. So that also led to the floating holiday suggestion as a practical fix for now. And perhaps if it ever became widely implemented or more widely implemented, that could be revisited at some future time. So that I will close with that. I appreciate the spirit that you bring your comments and analysis to this room, and I hope you do, Brian, as well.
He's the one that started this whole problem.
No, it's good. I mean, it's very robust thinking.
Right, the good side.
Yeah. So I wanted to point out, which I didn't see until you started talking, Director Colley, on page 83, they do have personal days for the select agencies. So that's not leave, that's not vacation days or sick days or anything, but it is personal days, which sounds like the equivalent of a floating holiday. And so to that point, I can see where we seem a little low, combining personal days, floating holidays, and holidays for our 10 benchmark agencies. And I'm personally, do I have it wrong?
We didn't include personal days in the median.
Okay. Still, it's on the table.
It's the here, but it wasn't included in the, okay, in the average.
But it's on the table. And if you add it up on the table, we're low, mm-hmm, if you include those. And so I'm okay with adding a third floating holiday. And I just had, also because of Director Colley's comments, there's a few things that are inconsistent with what was said in section 13.3. I agree if we're using 9 hours, we should just say 9 hours, 3 9-hour days instead of 8 or 9, unless you want to still do the 8 or 9, but then I don't know about the 12-hour people. But if we're going to do 9, it should just say 9, 3 9-hour days in 13.3. It also says a floating holiday should be taken as a whole day, and you said they're doing half, so we probably want to strike that. And then on the next page, 86 of the packet, it has two floating holidays at the top there. I probably won't make that three. But other than that, I'm okay with it. And I like the flexibility of people being able to pick their holiday that they want to celebrate.
All right. Any other comments? Yes, ma'am.
So first of all, I want to say thank you to whoever did the very thorough analysis. It sounds like it was maybe a few of you. So
it was Rachel and I.
Well, I hear General Manager Stone got involved too. And so whoever worked on that, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. To me, it was very helpful to help me come to a decision to support this because of the information that you provided to us. So I very much appreciate that because I know it looks like it took some time. So thanks. I don't fully understand the back end differences to HR between calling something a holiday versus personally versus, or personal day versus, paid leave, some other type of leave category. So I'm not going to comment on that, but to speak to your concern, Director Colley, at some point in the future, we can kind of get a more overarching analysis, and maybe this is coming with some other report down the line, of kind of overall benefits that include other types of leave as well outside of holidays and floating holidays, that we could look at sometime in the future to address that. But in the meantime, I am supportive of this. I'm glad that thanks to direction from some of our board members, that this analysis was done, and we're kind of bringing ourselves up to the rest of the industry standard, so that our employees can have time off with their families and recharge and come back to work refreshed. So thank you.
All right. Any additional comments? Yes, Director.
So first of all, I'm going to echo everybody's words. Thank you for the research. This was great. I think Director Colley's comments about, I understand your concerns about, and you're looking at it in a holistic view, right? You were saying like people, there's a lot of different things that go into why people want to work somewhere, paid leave, holidays, and things like that. I think that beyond that, there's also this additional, I guess, concept of culture that we have in the agency. And I think that that's also something that we're trying to make our employees feel comfortable here, just even beyond the monetary compensation, which is, let's be honest, it's important. But I think that, you know, tone and all that kind of stuff is very important, which is why, you know, I originally asked about Juneteenth. And I see, and I, again, thank you so much for this, because I was surprised by some of this. I didn't expect it to be like this, although I do think that the trend is coming. And I think if the city of Santa Clarita is doing it, you know, I think that this will be a discussion for years to come. I wish we would be leaders, but honestly, having, I think, a third day that floats, that lets people take the days that they feel are most important to them, I think is very important as well. I agree with Director Gutzeit's comments. I think that we should clean it up and have it 9 hours. And honestly, if our intention is to have mental health days, or like take the day and enjoy it, be with your family, do something. I think I also lean towards not having it taken as half days, just because it's like, this is what it's meant for. Go take the day. Don't be here for 4 hours and then leave. So that's yeah. And I'm fully supportive of the 3 days, and I understand Director Colley's concerns, but I'm going to have to disagree with you on this one.
All right. So we have beat this up a little bit, and I think there's three, I'm looking at things. First of all, I want to make a comment. We don't want to micromanage staff, payroll department, or anything else. And I understand thoroughly the concept of how the payroll program works, and you got to put in the numbers, and whether it's 8 hours or 9 hours, the program's automatically going to spit it out. It's not going to spit out a 0.2. It's going to come up with a specific number. Second thing, I think that there's three specific subjects to this, and I just like a thumbs up or a thumbs down to my question. No comment. I want a thumbs up or a thumbs down. Are we going to be adding? Is everybody in favor or not in favor of adding an additional day? Okay, so we got one down, we got four up. So consensus moves it in one direction. The second situation is in reference to 27 hours. Everybody in favor or not in favor of 27 hours? Meaning adding an additional 9 hours to the program instead of eight, or instead of having staff go in here and try to figure what employees are going to do 8 hours, what employees are going to do 9 hours. So we got it up, 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 down, up. You're indifferent. Okay. So, and then the last thing is whether we're just going to be looking at, whether we're just going to be looking at the name being floating hours, you know, versus something else. I think floating hours is kind of an all-encompassing. So thumbs up. Not sure yet. Thumbs up. Thumbs up. Floating holiday. Okay. So once again, the only other comment I would like to say, which we've already, you know, voted on, is out of the study that she gave us, that Ms. Patterson gave us, was, you know, 3 out of 10, you know, had the 12-hour days. And did not have the 13 or so. And that was, that's Cucamonga, excuse me, Cayegas has 12 hours, Irvine Ranch has 12, and Las Virgenes has 12 hours total, including floating days, including personal days, et cetera. So in reality, Santa Clarita is with the norm. It's not on the low scale, but there's people that have 15, there's people that have 12. But we've already voted, or let me rephrase that, we've already suggested that we move this on by adding an additional day. So I would say we take it back, and if Director Colley doesn't want it to go on consent because of that question, I would just have it go back to the board, not have it come back to finance to discuss what we're going to call it. And I would announce that at the board that it's a 5-4 discussion as to you know, how to move forward on this. So do not put it on consent, put it on the agenda is how I would look at it. Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah,
okay.
And we will try to clean up and clarify the language where it's been noted, including the discipline language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I did find language in the vacation policy that's a little bit softer. It does still say discipline, but it says may be subject. And I believe that was actually raised when we looked at the vacation policy early in the agency's inception, when we did that exercise of looking at each component unit's prior policies and choosing which ones to combine to go forward with. And somebody caught that at that time and changed to may be subject to discipline as opposed to will, could be, or would be.
So, I just want to make sure it doesn't come back to the board with a lot of red ink like the investment.
Well, if we take it at the same time, it'll look a lot less red than the investment policy.
Did you have one last comment, Director?
Yeah, I just one other language change that you ought to probably work on because confuses the hell out of me. So in 13.3, it says, in addition, each calendar year, all full-time probationary and full-time regular employees would be entitled to 3 floating holidays, which may be selected at the beginning of the year by the general manager. So,
yeah, so there is an exception. We once in a while, we run into a situation where it becomes very apparent that it would be good to designate one of the floating holidays around one of the major holidays in order to avoid
people showing up to work
right
that day.
Right. Yeah. And okay. So we just go ahead and do that. It's probably comes up about every 3 or 4 years. I don't know. You could probably analyze it.
Yeah. Okay.
With a weekly calendar.
Yeah. So if you look at Christmas being on a Tuesday, everybody's right. Not going to be here on Monday. I got it.
Exactly.
So can we clean that language up though a little bit so that, I mean,
yeah, to make it more clear what that's about.
Yeah. So okay. Maybe a separate sentence that says that one of those holidays may be locked right in by the general manager or something to that effect.
Okay.
Because otherwise, yeah, that's as clear as, yeah.
So Rochelle, when would you look at this going to the board?
It's slated to go the first meeting in October 6th.
First meeting in October 9th. So that gives you time.
Fourth.
Whatever the first meeting. So the question is, that gives you time to clean it up and bring it over there.
Yeah, we have a week.
Okay, so we're in consensus. Move it forward. Do not put it on consent. Open for discussion. And hopefully you have some clarification. We'll bring it to you, Rochelle, for your presentation. Or I assume President Martin will bring it to you for your presentation on it. All right, so moving on to, we got to keep track of Director Colley. We only got 3 hours. All right, so item 6, once again, looking at flexible workplace program policy, the status update presented by Rochelle Patterson.
So last year when the committee and the board approved the policy for the flexible workplace program, the committee asked after a year that we just come back and just say, hey, how's it going? Is it working? Is it not working? So we have a couple statistics and we asked a few questions, and this is just a quick presentation to kind of go through where we are today. So there are about 79 employees who utilize or have an application for the flexible workplace program. 18 of those employees have assigned 1 day per week, and 61 employees 2 days per week. We had, out of the 79, we had 51 responses to our little informal survey. So 100% of those employees responded said they feel that they are productive. 100% of managers feel that their staff is productive. 45% of employees favor more flexibility. And 100% of managers favor even more flexibility. And then we've completed dozens of department goals and projects have been completed while working remotely. Either it was from the last year or COVID, because that was 100% remote work. We've accomplished a lot while some staff are working remote. Next slide. So the participants were asked 3 questions. One is, do you feel like you are as productive when you're working from home? The second one is, how do you feel about a requirement that everyone must come in on a specific day? And the third one was just asking any suggestions that they had about the policy. Next slide. So the couple of the responses for, are you as productive at home? These are quotes. Yes, less distractions, more productive. Yes, communication is easy and reliable via Teams, 8x8, et cetera. And yes, fewer impromptu meetings, drop-ins, and walk-by conversations. Next slide. For question two, the assigned in-office day. Now, not every department has this, but I can let you know, since most of my department is here, that Wednesdays is a day that I like to have all of my staff in at once. It allows for collaboration and you can see each other. And if you have a meeting that you need to actually look at, that you're all here on one specific day. So a couple of the comments were, like it. They get to see people and maintain the team camaraderie. Helps me plan for office duties and meetings. And I don't mind, but also don't think it needs to be required. So that's a quote from a participant. Next slide. So the question three was, any policy suggestions? One is no changes. They have less commuting, stress, and agency costs. Everyone wins. So grateful, would love for the policy to remain and the policy and more possibly more flexibility of remote days, Next slide. So the manager survey, there were five questions, really six. So is the policy overall working for you as a supervisor manager? Do you see a need for additional flexibility? What are your thoughts on more remote days? Your staff say they have been productive. Are you seeing that? Are there any items in the policy that need to be strengthened? And then I just asked for a list of project accomplishments while working remote. So some of the answers for the first question, is the policy working? So yes, the staff are more relaxed and productive. Yes, always easy to reach staff when needed, and excellent appreciation and retention strategy. The question two, the need for additional flexibility. More flexibility would be beneficial. Informal agreements would suffice. Helpful when employees need to isolate, but are well enough to work from home. And certain roles make sense to expand. Next slide. Thoughts on more remote days. Managers and supervisors' responses were, flexibility is sufficient rather than more days. Yes, could help achieve other objectives such as office sharing. Fine as long as reliable coverage is established, and would be great, might vary based on role. And question four, is your staff productive? Yes, goals are being met and projects completed. Productive in the office equals productive at home. Yes, faster and more accurate responses. No commute means they're on time or early. And yes, due to new tools and better workflows. Question five, was any items that need to be strengthened? No, it's a strong policy. No items need to be strengthened, but allow for more flexibility. No, but reminders to staff regarding handling of confidential info while remote. And that, of course, comes from our IT staff. And this next slide, it's not meant to be read, but these are just a dozen or so projects of things that have been, projects have been completed while working remote. We've had some, quite a few big projects, you know, out of necessity, mostly because of COVID. Like we did the ERP conversion, 100% remote. Now it all had its issues. It would have been nice to be in the office a couple of days during that time, but still were able to complete that. Our CIS integration, deployment configuration of our remote work. So it was a necessity. Monthly closing board reports, audits, a couple audits we've done remote. So a lot of projects remote. Everything still has to get done. Everything's being done, whether in the office or working remote. So in summary, we still believe the policy allows staff to be productive and are productive. It is flexible, but possibility more of more flexibility, and definitely has a good work-life balance. So that concludes my report.
All right, great. Thank you very much. Do we have any public comment?
No public comment at this time.
All right. Any comments from the committee? Hi. Okay.
This made me really happy. It was great. It was really great to see this. And my only, some of these I could guess who they came from. But I was wondering what flexibility is sufficient rather than more days.
I think it's flexibility. Say if you have a team and some of their days are on maybe a Monday, Wednesday, and the other team is Tuesday, Thursday, remote. They're working on something together. Maybe they could switch one of those days so they can collaborate in the office together. Right now, our application is you say what days you're going to be working remote, and those are the days that you are working remote. Now, you can always come in on another day. There's, nobody saying that, but I think there would be nice to say that, hey, one week, hey, manager, is it okay if I work remote on Tuesday and come in on Monday because I'd like to be in this, meeting. I think that's the flexibility that we're looking for.
That was the component that I was missing here. But all in all, it looks like this was a great thing, and I definitely think we should consider expanding it.
Dr. Colley.
So, yeah, I was in support of this a year and or whatever ago. I remain, as a matter of fact, at that time, I was kind of pushing for more of this. There's a million things that are right with this, not the least of which is, frankly, the each person we take off of the roads, it's much more than the pollution that they alone would generate that day, because if you take a person off the road, everybody else is getting there a whole lot faster. And so our road infrastructure needs us to do this more. The only concern that I would have on this is an hourly employee, a non-exempt employee. I would hope managers are being somewhat careful with them, because it is tempting when you're working from home and your kids have the day off of school and to kind of split your time between both and those kinds of things. It's not uncommon for an employee working remotely to need to split their attention or feel a need to split their attention. So an exempt employee, that's not a big a concern to me, because frankly, even on this holiday thing, for the exempt employees, it's not going to matter. You have a job to do and you get it done. But an hourly employee, we need to make sure. But I would be very much in favor of looking at the policy and making sure that it's continuing to be as good as it can be and allow our managers and employees more flexibility, because I think it's this is the new norm, and it's a good thing. I guess one other thought, and I don't know if anybody could possibly answer it, but are there hard feelings being developed if I am a utility worker? Working from home, digging ditches in my backyard might not be a very productive use of the agency's time. Are we developing any? I mean, these were the survey went to folks that are able to participate, not to the folks whose job just simply doesn't, there's many of our workers, laboratory, the water quality. There's lots of jobs that just can't be done remotely. And I would worry a little bit that we create some hard feelings. that why do you get to and I don't? Well, it's kind of obvious why you can't, because the backhoe isn't going to do us any good at your house. But I would have you be sensitive to that and to maybe be listening for that possibility and seeing if there, if it exists, and if it does, can there be anything be done about it? But other than that, I'm very much in support. Thanks.
All right, great. So there's just a couple quick comments. Number one, once again, I had some conversation with Ms. Patterson regarding the honor system, and the honor system seems to be working very well with the employees. The managers are comfortable with the honor system. There is the ability for the managers to check in with the employee on a daily or weekly basis to feel comfortable that they're sitting at their desk or at least talk about some of the work that they're working on. So from that standpoint, I think that's something that's been working well, supposedly, and, you know, we can move on from there. This program was actually set up based on the pandemic. You know, some people, I won't put that pun in. So some people feel that the pandemic's over. I definitely don't. I think a lot of us don't feel it's over, in the sense that there's so many variations of what's going on that we could end up having people, you know, sick on and off for quite a while. So I think this program that was developed is working very well. It's meeting the agency's needs and goals. And I think that's great. And so my basic personal opinion is, if it's not broken, don't fix it. You know, let's move it on. And I would like to see it continue, you know, as it is, maybe for another year, to bring another year review or 6 month review, whatever staff feels is a good time to review this, and let it come back to see how it's working out. And you know, you've done surveys, not necessarily surveys, but you've done internal questioning as to how many people have been off sick because of the COVID situation, how many have not. That's obviously on a decline, but this is something that even if COVID wasn't here, might continue to be something that's very workable, strictly because of everything we've said, everything from, you know, workers' comp issues for not having to drive into work, you know, fuel savings for the employees, you know, less traffic on the roads for the people that want to leave California, and so on and so on. So if there's no specific comments about this, we just let it stand and bring it back to us, you know, at your prerogative. Is that fair enough? Yes, you can go.
Yeah, just quick comments. I just wanted to say, I felt like this was like the highlight of the packet. I was very excited to read this too. I know as someone who had a flexible schedule offered to me when I was working, it made me very much more appreciative to my employer. And I felt like I was even more of a dedicated employee because I was so appreciative of the opportunity to have better work-life balance because of it. So, and this was back when this wasn't a thing. So, so I'm glad to see it kind of become a thing now. It's kind of becoming standard. I'm glad that we're embracing it. I think it's a good thing for everybody. I would be open to whenever everybody else is ready to maybe adding an extra day to it too. I think that would be a good step when everybody's comfortable with that. I also had the question about, I guess my only concern is if, I don't know if management is also all doing the flex schedule, but just making sure that if people who are in the office who do need supervision or need some assistance, that is there for them in the office. I guess, and that's my only concern. But other than that, I'm super supportive and I'm glad to see the positive feedback. So thank you.
Yeah, just a couple of quick questions. I wasn't here when this was formulated, but so to direct, I think it was Director Crawley's comment, is it like data logging or anything that you have to be logged onto your computer and doing keystrokes every so often, or is it honor system?
No, it's honor system, but it's with the tools that are in place now, whether it's the Teams or 8x8. I mean, instead of somebody walking down the hall and see if they're there, you know, they hit Teams and, you know, you get a response right away. And the managers and supervisors know they have to be productive. That's everything's here runs on deadlines. Mm-hmm. So, you know when it's done, when it's not done.
Yeah.
So it is mostly on the honor system.
Right. And I would assume the flip side to that comment, and speaking from real life, if you have something during the day and you have a deadline the next day, you're working at 11 at night mm-hmm. to get it done. Yeah, I was just wondering about that because I know some companies do like, keystroke watching. And then I didn't quite understand the request for flexibility on a different day. Are they picking their days in advance and then they can't change it? Is that the issue? Or well, they can't change it without permission? Or
the policy and application is, I think it's pretty strict. The application, you say where you're working. So the address where your remote work site is,
mm-hmm.
And then also which days, and it's for planning too. So, mm-hmm. Supervisors and managers know who's going to be in on a specific day and they can plan. So it could be a little bit more messy if we, allow flexibility because you're not quite sure who's in or out that day and who's switching their days. And that's the reason why a set schedule.
Okay.
So you know who is in on which day.
That makes sense if you're expecting to see someone on a certain day and they're not there, but there's always the option to come in to meet with maybe a different department on a day that you would normally, nobody's making them stay home on the other day, right?
No, and okay. Some of those actually choose their work at the office all the time. They may have an application in, so they have the option.
Mm-hmm.
And people choose, sometimes they're more productive at work
mm-hmm.
than they are at home. Maybe there's other distractions and they prefer to work in the office. Okay.
And then do we have any that are allowed to do full remote? You talked about like, where is their workplace? We hear about whatever people in Aspen, really nobody here, but that lives in Aspen and works for SCV Water. Do they have to be nearby and have a certain minimum number of days to come in?
There's the director on this committee who requested that an employee would need to return to the office within 2 hours if requested.
Okay. Okay.
So no, that you can't be in Aspen. And...
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Unless it's really down there. All right, if there's no other conversation on this, Director Colley is going to, yes, sir.
So I want to follow up on Director Gutzeit's comment. The problem she raises with an hourly employee, when you combine the law with what the employee would want to do. Okay. So me personally, I would have no difficulty at all. Okay. You goof off for a couple of hours in the middle of the day, you can drive your kid to school, do whatever you want to do. And then you make up the time, from 9 to 11 that evening. That would be fine with me, but unfortunately the legislators didn't make it fine. So if we suffer the employee to work, which means essentially that if we don't tie them up and make it so they can't work, they log in at 9 o'clock and work till 11. That's 2 hours. And if they're an hourly employee and we fail to pay them for that, then that goes real bad for us real fast, because then that employee who did plan on suing, but something else goes bad and there's, So the hourly employee is the one I'm concerned with. The exempt employee, I'm sure our general manager works past 11 o'clock often. So
is that AM or PM?
I was going to give him credit for working at night, but okay. Apparently we differ.
That was good, RG. That was great.
So, but I would like to see this policy reviewed in the near term to see if the managers can agree on a more liberal policy that would continue this, the good parts of this, without giving us some new problems. But I'd like to see staff in the relative near term review it and see if it can be expanded, as the managers have apparently asked.
All right, great. Thank you. Going back to, just to reconfirm on this, did I ask for public comment on this item?
Okay. Yes, and there is none.
So just continuing that snowball down the hill, Michelle Patterson, would you tackle item number 7?
Yes. So on the statement of revenues and expenses.
Yeah, recommend receiving and filing of the financial reports.
Not a ton to report. This is the first month reporting of the fiscal year. We do have, we are seeing a little bit lower than anticipated water revenues, primarily due to conservation. Now we will see these lower revenues in the summer months as we start going into, November, December, January. The budget is much less for water revenues, and it's probably primarily more indoor usage, so we probably won't see as high conservation. But in our quarterly report, we would have a little bit more detailed information on water sales and the conservation efforts. Most things are under budget, so we can look through all of these. A lot of them have to do with year-end payroll accrual reversals, and our capital program is off to a little bit slower start, so we're about $5.6 million under budget in our PAYGO program. So we have an increase to our net position of about $5.9 million, which is about exactly the amount of money that PAYGO was under budget. We have our investment report in here. We did keep in the three-month cash flow, which was in the quarterly report, but since we have that information, we figured we would just report it monthly, and it's just a rolling three-month cash flow. So this one starts with September, and then will end in November. There is a little bit also added into the debt and cash position page, and it has to do with the debt coverage ratio that I think was recommended by Director Armitage, and it just has a brief description of what the debt coverage ratio is and how it's calculated. And if you look on page 120, it actually has the graph with the debt coverage ratio. Now this is as our forecast is today with whatever debt issuances we needed in order to do our capital plan. So this is forecast only. And it's noted that it is a forecast and is subject to change. But this is the way that it sits currently in our forecast with our debt coverage ratio. And then we continue to have our cash position there, and our total assets won't change until the fiscal year 22 audit is complete. And that's pretty much the new additions to the monthly report.
Great. Any public comment?
Let's see here. No public comment at this time.
All right, great. Any comments from the committee? Director Armitage?
Just quickly, I just want to say thank you for adding that additional information on the debt service coverage ratio. Appreciate it.
Director Brownstein.
So on the first, when you were talking about the consumption of water, I know we're asking people to we're asking people to conserve 15 to 20%. So shouldn't we adjust our budgeted for like what we're asking people to do, or at least closer?
Well, this way we can at least track if we are over and under budget. So our budget is based on our rate study. So all our revenues are based on that study. So at least if we keep the revenues as our budget, we know what we are under budget based on what we required. So we can, I think it's easier to track if we keep our budget in there, because we knew that we had a contingency. We had some additional unrestricted cash funds that were left over that we could tie into, or we could grab if we needed to, if we were under budget by a significant amount. And I think we estimated 8.3 or 8.4 million over the course of a year. And that we could cover that with our unrestricted cash that was left over from last year. So, you know, we can show it either way, but I feel it's something easy to look at to see this is where we thought we were going to be, and this is where we are, and then we can justify the difference.
Okay, that makes sense. And then on the lovely debt service coverage graph, 23-24 makes me go, that's kind of close. So it makes me a little nervous. So, like, do we have a plan, thoughts?
It's right now, it's based on revenues, expenses, and our projected debt service. Now, this does have a projected debt service in the forecast for to pay for capital projects that we are going to request this year. So it does have next year, it would start the payment, and that's why it drops down a little bit.
Like to the line. Like the margin of error looks like it's like non-existent. Is there anything we can hypothetically do aside from not adding
so not do the debt, increase revenues, decrease expenses.
Okay, because this honestly is, that makes me nervous, that little on the line there. I don't know if anybody else is nervous about that, but it makes me nervous. And that's it for me.
Hey, good. Thank you. So I think one thing about budgeting is an excellent tool without getting into the actual financials. And it's a way for you to see and manage your, you know, your growth and your revisions that need to be done. So if income's down 15% and expenses are down 2%, we've got a problem. So revising the budget, based on some of this, I don't feel that that's a good idea. It is an excellent working tool to be able to accomplish things other than just looking at the profit and loss and things of that nature. I think your concerns about the little black line or whatever color it is a valid concern. It's a concern to everybody. And, Rochelle and I have talked, and she's talked to other people. Anybody that would like to call her and obviously have a conversation with you, more than welcome to do that. But, getting into the planning and getting into our budget for next year and forecasting, hopefully that line is secure to where it's not going to be as nervous come, next July when we start our new year. So I don't know that I really answer your questions, but from a financial standpoint, which is my background, I feel comfortable that we're working on the numbers to make sure that we get the success that we need. So that's my comment on the whole thing. So if there's nothing else on this, then move on to item 8 for the committee calendar. Anything specific on that, Rochelle?
Well, next month, October 24th, it's 1 month delayed. We will be prepared to have some scenarios for debt issuances, what it does to rates, using reserves, what it does to rates, increasing our PAYGO, and what it could potentially do to rates. So big discussion next month. Yes. And it was delayed from this month because the municipal advisor is out of the country this month. So we delayed it till next month. And then, let's see, we will have that discussion on retiree medical benefits. We're still coming up with our staff report for that one and options. That will be discussion as well. And then along with the other scenarios for the debt and rates, we'll bring back that debt management policy to see if we can get that revised and adopted. And that is it for next month.
All right, great. I'm assuming there's no public comment.
That's correct. No public comment on the calendar.
So, I'm happy to see, or glad to see, item 9 is something that I had requested a few months ago, simply because we don't really get the opportunity to request to see certain things that are through the finance section with regards to future agenda items. So does anybody have any future agenda items that they would like to have brought to, you know, to the committee over the next, 30, 60, 90 days? If not, it's just put here as a placeholder.
All right. Can I make
a
request?
That was only a question.
I want to make a request. I don't know where to put it on this list, but my request goes to Rochelle. And actually, my request goes that I would love that some of these items be presented by HR, since they are the people.
You're going to see one in the general section.
Okay, good. Because I think that, you know, especially representing our staff, I think that I'd like to hear their voice. So that's my.
That's right. So
no, we so have the, we the have an hour and 2 minutes.
2 minutes.
Those people back there sitting in the dark, I can't see
them. Okay, then what do you ask so many questions? You can't see. So moving on to item 10, general report. Do we have anything on the general report?
We do. We have a presentation by our HR department.
There goes your 2 minutes.
So we have Ari Mantis, our HR manager, and our HR analyst, Jenny Ju, and they are going to report on a recruitment process, which was also a recommendation by the committee.
Good evening, everyone. Good evening, committee chair, committee members, general manager, staff, and members of the public. My name is Ari Mantis, and I'm your human resources manager. During the last F&A committee meeting, one of you or some of you requested that we present to you information about the recruitment and hiring process. So today I'm here to introduce you to Jenny Ju. She is our HR analyst, and she lives and breathes recruitment. That is her role within the agency. She's been doing this for the last 8 years. This has been with our agency, and she can tell you how the hiring process works for us. Now, I want you all to be very nice to Jenny Ju, because members, committee members that are not, might be disciplined by HR. So here is Jenny.
I'd be careful, Jenny.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to come and speak with you and share some information about our recruitment process. Today, our objective is to provide you with a general understanding of SCV Water and public sector hiring process. Next slide, please. Thank you. So we do have a policy about recruitment and hiring. It is employee policy number 6. You can find it on our website. Some important things to note from that is that the general manager or his designee can fill vacant positions by any of the following processes. Appointment of a qualified present or laid off agency employee without an announcement or examination. An appointment of a present agency employee following an announcement and internal process. Or an appointment following an announcement and an open competitive process. Thank you, Erica. So to define an open competitive process, what does this mean? This means that the recruitment is open to any person, employee, or non-employee who meets the minimum qualifications of the classification. So typical ways to qualify and meet the minimum qualifications is to have certain licenses, certifications, education, and experience. And a lot of times it's a mixture of the two. We do have an internal process where there are oftentimes where only current agency employees may apply. And a lot of the times, actually, we do have some limited duration employment. And some of those employees come from temporary agencies. The agency is an equal employment opportunity employer. And this means that the agency does not discriminate based on race, religion, color, national origin, ancestry, disability, marital status, sex, gender, age, orientation, military or veteran status, etc. So next slide, please. So we start with a job announcement. NeoGov is the recruitment system that we use internally. As an HR user who leads recruitment, I use the system called Insight, and it allows me to manage all of the aspects of recruitment, from scheduling, communicating with candidates, communicating with hiring managers. That is where everything is housed. It's a very popular public sector tool, and we've been using it since I started 8 years ago. Ari gave me the project of implementing it, so it's kind of my baby, and I've seen it grow, and we've expanded it, and now that hiring managers are able to use the OHC, which is the Online Hiring Center, and it allows them to review the applications within the system, and I don't have to, attach PDF attachments. They can log into the system and view everything within there. And it's good because the applications are stored electronically, and it provides the statistics about our recruitments, and it archives everything for the standard 3 years. To start with a recruitment, we start with a hiring requisition that is approved and goes through the proper channels to ensure that the proper management is, it goes through the proper channels to make sure that we have the position allocated on the board approved position control, which Rochelle did review with you guys today. Governmentjobs.com is the applicant facing side. So anybody that is interested in a job will go on governmentjobs.com/career/SCVWater, and they'll be able to see all of our job opportunities. One great thing too, if people are interested in getting employed with the agency, but they don't see a current opportunity, they can go to the class specifications that they can view and learn what they would need to, what qualifications they would need to have to be able to fill a future vacant position. And people can also fill out interest cards and let us know that they'd be interested in knowing when that opportunity arises. So next slide, please. The job announcement starts with the class specification. It is a clear explanation of the duties, the minimum qualifications, knowledge, skills, and abilities needed for all of our positions. So the class spec is basically the job description and is an overview of the position. So those are always board approved and developed by a combination of input from HR, department heads, consultants, and sometimes also reviewed by our legal counsel. The job bulletin is more specific, and that's where the hiring manager can specify what the department's current needs are. We don't deviate too much from the class spec because it provides all of the important duties and points of the position. So sometimes we add working titles, but it stays pretty much in line with whatever is approved. On the job bulletin, we do advertise the salary range for the position and a clear opening and closing deadline so people know that they need to get the applications in by a certain point, and that's when we will move forward in the process. So our job postings, we post on our agency website, Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and all staff and temps are also notified via email. On here, you'll see a sample of one of the social media posts put together by our public information team. They do a great job at, you know, getting the message out there for us, putting good branding messaging out there so people are attracted to our jobs. Typically, we do paid ads with BC Water jobs, water district jobs, and for certain jobs that are very industry specific, we'll post them on those professional boards, such as ASCE, which is the engineering professional organization. And we also place local ads with LiveWork SCV. That's powered by the Economic Development Corporation. And also we share it with College of the Canyons. We have a good partnership with COC, and we do like to share that opportunity with them so they can share it with their their contacts. So once we get into the recruitment, the exam plan has different evaluation steps. So the first step is the application is received in the NeoGov system. HR will screen these based on the minimum qualifications. Then the applications are sent to the hiring manager, who act as our subject matter experts. They go through the applications and they review all of the different qualifications, and they determine if they would need a written test or if we will go straight to an oral exam. If we do have a written test, we have contracted with eSkill, and they're an online service where we're able to do custom tests. Sometimes we do custom tests for technical positions, such as the treatment plant operators or the water systems technicians. But a written test is not always required. The oral exam is, and we either do those via Zoom or we do those in person. After that, we have a selection panel, and we put together a panel, and they have interviews, and they score using interview questions. Yes, and during the interviews, we do keep the questions consistent just to promote a fair process. So the fun stuff, after the interviews, the job offer is made once the hiring manager decides. We place an offer, I make a nice phone call, and then we also follow up with a letter and a summary of the agency's benefits package. Oh, yes. So to step back, the panelist, the hiring manager typically participates on the panel. We select another person from another agency holding a similar position. And at times, we also bring in outside panelists so they can provide an objective and neutral opinion recommendation of the hiring. Okay, cool. So after the job offer, we then move into the pre-hire process. So once the candidate accepts, I initiate the background, medical examination, and drug screening and fingerprinting. Our background goes back 7 years, and it reviews the education, experience, and a criminal background. The medical exam and drug screening, that is an occupational examination just to make sure that the person is fit for duty. And then the fingerprinting goes through the Department of Justice, and it's a typical requirement for the public sector. So after that is done and the person clears the pre-hire process, we begin onboarding. I meet with the employee and do a new hire orientation. They also have a benefits orientation with Linda Pointer. She's our other HR analyst. They meet with safety, and now they also have a security orientation where they meet with IT to learn all of the security and safety policies on that. And once that is done, the recruitment is complete. And they run to the finish line, and we have a happy hiring manager and an even happier new employee because they get to start their career here at SCV Water. So does anyone have any questions?
We'll get to public comment first. Are you finished with your presentation? You. And then you can stay there in case I have any questions for you. So do we have any public comment?
No public comment at this time.
All right. You're back to you. So any questions? From the committee to Jennifer, Director Colley.
Just a real quick question. If a panel decided on candidate A and the hiring manager had strong feelings that A is no good and B is the preferred candidate, who gets hired?
That goes to the chief and the directors, and they discuss that hiring process from there.
So
Yes, that is correct. Rarely we have conflicts because we're using a scoring method, and usually the one that is the top candidate scored by all of the panelists, that will be the person who is offered and selected for the position and is offered the position. However, if there is a conflict, then we do recommend the hiring manager to talk to us and to talk with their chief or their director, someone a higher level, and we have the discussion, because sometimes a candidate B might be the better fit for the environment, maybe not have all the qualifications. So we're flexible in that way, but we will never hire the candidate number D. I mean, we will hire A, B, and C, nothing lower than C. So that gives you.
Okay. Yes. I just wanted to make sure that the manager isn't going to be have somebody kind of push down their throat.
Oh, no, that, no. Yeah. We never do that. Okay. And we never had complaints about the recruitments. Usually it's the only happy aspect of HR recruitment, because you have a happy hiring manager and then a happy candidate that starts again their career with our agency. And we offer robust benefits to attract. And now we're going to add one more floating holiday. So it's that's really more for attraction and retention. So, well, we have to be funny in HR. Otherwise, you will be crying every day. If I see what I do,
thank you.
So, yeah, you're welcome. Any other questions?
Well, being funny takes me off the hook as the committee chair here, so that part's good. Any additional questions?
Director Amajas? Thank you. That was really great. And I'll say that was really cool because because of a comment I made that I immediately regretted after I said it, where I said, ENO does these cool presentations. And I didn't at all mean to imply that your information wasn't great and cool either. So that's why I'm like, cool presentation. I like it. No, it was great. I feel like I really understand the process now, and that's helpful to me to provide context when we get these other kind of piecemeal policies coming in front of us. So now I can kind of put it together like a puzzle. So I very much appreciate the presentation. Thank you so much. I appreciate that you've added the security orientation. I think that's a really, really important aspect, being a public utility. So thank you for that. And then just one question is there extra consideration? And maybe that's not the right term. I can't think of another one though, given to current staff who are looking to promote into different positions are we thinking about them versus people coming from outside the agency?
Been doing this, I guess, longer. Yes, we always look at the internal candidates. That's always number one discussion with the hiring manager. And if we feel we have the talent and it's already developed, absolutely, we will. If you looked at one of our reasons or rules for our policy, is that we announce the recruitments only internally. And that is exactly the reason that we would like to promote our internal employees to a higher level position. And that's why we also created the class specifications and class series. So you can have 1, 2, 3 different levels within a specific job, so employees can get promoted. So definitely the first thing we look is the internal candidate, anyone from every department available that they can do this job. So then in this case, we will only announce it internally. And then if there is no really talent, but we always expect our internal candidates to apply, because it's also a learning tool for them. The more they go for interviewing, the more they're going to learn, the more they're going to understand what questions we're asking and what skills are needed for the specific job. So maybe they're not promoted this year, but maybe a year or two from now, they will be ready to have that promotion. So definitely we allow them to interview and practice. Yeah.
Great. Thank you. So is that it?
Yeah.
So Jenny, I think you must have done an excellent job because Director Armitage only had two yellow post-it stickers instead of her normal six. So very good. I'd also like to say I think it's great that veterans aren't discouraged to apply since we may be looking for a job here pretty soon between the two of us. But I had asked before, and somebody probably gave me an answer, and I noticed on the screen, the application, not the application, but the presentation, that it does have some ratings based on points. And I had discussed, or I had asked, do veterans get any additional points when they apply? And I'm getting a yes, they do.
You know the scoring better.
Yes. Well, we don't have any specific points for veterans, but we do have a scoring system that we use during the recruitment process.
Well, they do get one extra point. If you have so many years of experience, you get that many points. If you have that certification, you get an additional point. If you're a veteran, you get an additional point. So yes, we do look all of the applications in that way, and they get additional points through the scoring process. Yes.
And the Marines wouldn't get this.
Yeah. No, all of them.
Yeah.
All of them. Veterans. And and also COC, when we partner with them, they do have, remember, they have a section that they do work with the military and veterans, and they post the positions there.
Yeah, and I think that's great. I think it's important. I can say that about 6 years ago, one of the veterans organizations I was working on had a veteran apply with the city and did not get the job. He came in second, and they brought to our attention that there was no point system allocation, which many of the other cities have. And we went directly to the city, and to be honest, and I was so excited because on the very next agenda, the city came up with additional points for veterans that was, brought to one of their city council meetings. So that's exciting. The veterans don't always come out of the service with the same job description that they can get into public. So these little things like that help. So any additional comments? Oh, no, I'm not letting you get off the authority. Director Peterson.
Well, my question is really a short one. It's off the top of your head. How many successful recruitments have you had this year?
You know what? She can do that. I do have my statistics.
Don't include the board of directors either.
He's looking for the statistics. Let me also say that we do create eligibility lists, which means after a recruitment, let's say we have scored the candidates, you know, maybe the A candidate was not higher, but the B was better for the fit for that particular position. But if that position within 6 months opens again in a different department, we will look in our recent recruitments and look at the evaluation of the eligibility lists and see if we can invite that person back to interview for that available position. So a veteran might be hired that way. So we don't say no to all of our top three candidates from every recruitment. We always keep them on our lists. So you know. Okay, and Jenny found the numbers.
Yeah.
Anything else? Go ahead.
We're looking at fiscal year 21-22. We had 8 hires so far in that fiscal year. And in the calendar year, we've had 11. So we've been really busy.
That's great. Director Bronstein?
I had the biggest success recruitment, your new director of water resources, mm-hmm. right? That will be coming up in November.
Jenny, are you prepared to step up pretty soon?
Yes, I mentors, and I really appreciate Rochelle for giving me this opportunity to present here. I was a little nervous, I don't know if you can tell, but it's great experience and great exposure, and I really appreciate meeting you and hearing all of the great things you guys have to say and help push our agency forward. So thank you.
I believe we have two more questions, Director Bronstein.
What, I'm limited to two?
No, I okay. I have one, so you're limited to one.
So this is going to be a really long question. So I'm glad that we're we look first internally. I hope we're also looking more local as well to help promote our community. I love that we reach out to COC. That's great. But I had a question about the panel again, if you can explain what this panel is and how many people are on this panel. And then the continuation of that question is...
That's a comma.
Comma. is how much movement actually happens at the agency? As in, how often do people have the opportunity to be promoted and to move to the next level?
So you want to go to the panelists? And then... Yeah, okay. So the panelist is typically the hiring manager, and they select another person here at the agency that is sometimes also a supervisor. And then we also look to really bring in someone from the outside to provide an additional perspective on the hires. So...
Do you guys have like a list of people that you invite in, or like how do you?
Sometimes the hiring manager will have some contacts, or they'll identify a city that is comparable or water agency that's comparable to us. And I'll reach out to their HR department, and the HR department will recommend someone else from their agency that they can, that we can borrow.
Yeah, and I just thought we provide that same reciprocal service on occasion to sit on a panel at a neighboring agency's recruitment. It really helps the staff feel like, you know, the scenario is you come in and you're up against three people who directly report to that person and you're the only one who doesn't. It helps that there are others in the interview panel, you know, to balance that out. So
it's more fair. Because you have a different perspective when you're an outside.
No, it sounds great. I just didn't understand how it worked.
Now, panelists are, the amount is 3 to 4. We like to not have a lot of panelists because then it becomes less fair. And also it's very intimidating for someone to walk into a room and see a whole bunch of people interviewing you. So depending on the position, if it's a higher level position, we might have, you know, 4 to 5 panelists. But for the regular positions that we interview for, they're about 3.
I had 11.
Yeah.
At Castaic Lake. Twice.
Yeah. Mistake.
That's only because 2 of them went on vacation.
So again, depending on the position, he had 11.
Yeah. Dr. Bronstein's dad.
Be again.
How much movement is there in the agency?
Few movement because we had a lot of retirements happening the last few years. So as soon as a retirement happens, that creates the movement. Now the person can move to that retiree level, and then everyone can move up. So we don't have really any issues promoting or hearing any complaints from our employees that we are discriminated against anybody. So pretty much things have been running smoothly, and we do, and also during our performance evaluation time, which is once a year, what happens in July, then we can also promote individuals during that process, the performance evaluation process, and they get from 1 level to 2 or from 2 to a senior level.
All right, great. So I have one question.
Yes.
Did your questions get answered? You noticed I said plural? Okay. I think the only question I have, there's so many future careers by applicants that have been destroyed by their social media Is social media part of our background research?
That's a very good question. Do you believe that the agency, we have an agency that we hire and they check the background? I don't believe they look at the social media. And we don't. We do not look because we don't want to be influenced by anything, or we want to be as fair as possible. So we typically do not look at the social media for individuals. We just don't do that. We just look at the criminal background, more employment background, meaning that what is this on the application, it's actually truthful. You know, dates of employment. Actually, you cannot ask for salary any longer on the state of California, so we do not ask for that anymore. And we also check for educational background, meaning that they do have the degrees that the candidate says that they have, the certifications and all that. But we kind of stay away from the social media.
All right. So with that, I'd like to say I think we had a lot of great agenda items tonight, a lot of good conversation on those items, some great presentations. And so with that, I believe unless there's any last comments by the committee, I think we're in adjournment. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So
thank you.
How are you in the snake business?
I'm not, but I'm letting you know.
How are you?